I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. This episode of Cybercrime Radio is brought to you by Threat Modeler, an automated threat modeling solution that secures and scales the enterprise software development lifecycle and empowers organizations to enable non-security professionals to prioritize and address threats strategically. To learn more, visit threatmodeler.com. Joining me today is John Steven, an industry expert and chief technology officer at Concourse Labs. John, welcome. It's so great to have you on the show.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's good to be on the show.
Of course. To start off, John, I'd love if you could tell us about your career in cybersecurity and how that's led to you being where you are today.
Sure. When I came out of school, I was doing network incident response and chasing down hacks. I joined a firm that was called Reliable Software Technologies, became Cigital. I was employee number 14 there. And, you know, we invented the notion, we discovered the notion that it was the software and it was application in defined application security as a space. Wrote the books on it, wrote the first tools to automate it. Came out with the first, definition of threat modeling, post 1972 and popularized those methods. And, back then, what we were doing is figuring out how to secure software. That was a new concept back then. And now it's something we all take for granted as a goal. And so when you enter a new space, like mobile was later, like IoT became, like mobile payments became, like cloud is, it's sort of easy to become a CTO because anything you do is better than nothing. And your job is to go out into the unknown and make sense of it and make progress and begin to build practices around it. And so that's what we did. We built practices around discovering defects in software, fixing them proactively, training developers not to make those mistakes, building security in, modeling threats and secure design, ultimately building programs around the combination of all of those practices for CISOs inside of large organizations. And so it was a lot of fun to do each of those practice areas and turn art into science again and again. And boy, looking back, we learned a lot of how not to do things and maybe eventually how to scale them up and do them right well.
And so, John, for anyone who's listening who might be unfamiliar, what is threat modeling?
So threat modeling is an interesting one because in the application security space, it's been the practice area most resistant to pinning down. Ed Amoroso wrote on it first in his book on computer security in the 70s. So it's been around this concept, threat modeling systems has been around for a long time. The reason I think it's been hard to pin down is because threat modeling naturally encapsulates that think step where you're not trying to automatically discover a defect that's well known in an implementation. You're not testing software for a known exploit. You're trying to think or counterfactualize, hypothesize how attackers may be motivated and then may be able to exploit weaknesses in your system or features for unintended and malicious purposes in your system. And so because it necessarily depends on that thinking, hypothesis testing, it's been harder for people to get their arms around than some of the other practice areas. It's remained more artistic, if you will.
And so to build on that, why has threat modeling been so hard to pin down and what are firms to do about the various frameworks and methodologies?
I think it's been hard to pin down for organizations that have tried it for two reasons. One, sometimes they try to apply it in the wrong place or in the wrong phase. Threat modeling, people will say, oh, I'm going to threat model my web application. Well, we know pretty well what's going to go wrong in web applications and what components, what security controls, what compensating controls need to be put in place. So we maybe don't have to think, you know, in this cloud about what a web app, you know, what's going to go wrong in a web app. So one, you know, people try to apply it where other tools and techniques will work. I would really suggest that people focus their threat modeling when on areas of their business where the business is changing fundamentally. You know, like when physical credit cards became mobile payment or other virtual, you know, credit technologies, that's a place to threat model. When you take the physical bank and you move it online, that's a place to threat model. When the business physics change. Another place to apply threat modeling is when your tech stack changes. So if you're moving from the data center to the cloud, or if you're adding not only browser support to your web app, but mobile support. These are times to do that think step and to wonder, how has the change in what my business is trying to accomplish put the important elements of my business at risk in new ways? Or how does the technology shift that I'm undertaking open up for attackers new vectors to cause me trouble? And so, you know, one way to make it easier for people to pin down is to sort of do it for the right reasons at the right time and to confine the effort to those things, which it is well suited to do.
And so, John, is threat modeling a nice to have, or is it essential to enterprises and their posture?
So that's an interesting way to kind of re-ask the previous question in a way. It's, you know, we have a lot of automation available to us as security professionals these days that we didn't a decade or two ago. Threat modeling shouldn't be used as a nice to have where we have good automation around finding defects that are well known. But threat modeling is essential to businesses and should be used where they're pivoting where their business operates or what tech stack it operates on. And everybody's move to self-service IT and infrastructure as code is really changing the way we build and deliver software. And so threat modeling is essential in understanding how that exposes our development pipelines to attack. Likewise, as we go self-service IT in the cloud, as we go to self-service use of middleware applications and cloud APIs, threat modeling is essential to understanding how that's going to be different than when we developed software monolithically and deployed it within the four walls of our data center. So if people are doing digital transformation and thinking about engineering-led, you know, delivery pipelines, using infrastructure as code, moving to cloud technologies, then it's absolutely essential that those firms consider updating their threat model, because the automation of how those attacks are going to occur doesn't benefit from the time and experience that the previous technology shifts now does.
And to play devil's advocate for the next question, can't we just do DFDs?
So because threat modeling has been tough to pin down, and because it is that think step, different religious sects have cropped up that focus on different aspects of the threat modeling job. Threat modeling isn't a point-in-time monolithic activity, like a code review or like a pen test. Threat modeling is a series of activities and a hub of information that stays with you and that you incrementally accomplish as you move through software's lifecycle. When you think about how your software is going to be used, you think about misuse cases. When you think about your design and your architecture, you know, you can start to think about the attack surfaces, and you can begin to write your model, your functional and your platform model. You can then do vulnerability hypothesis testing and think about what you need to securely design or what you must test to make sure works or isn't vulnerable in your system. And threat modeling is the sum of all of those little practice areas and more. One of the religions that's cropped up around threat modeling, and it came out of Microsoft, is using DFDs or data flow diagrams. This is a very valuable tool that testers use to understand software at a unit or an integration level, model that software and the flow of information through it, look at where trust or privilege occurs, and where it's bounded and where it's compartmentalized, and then hypothesize tests that maybe the tools don't have that allow you to find new ways to exploit the software. It's totally reasonable that Microsoft, a firm that has got the Gates memo on security that's over a decade old, and that has a very high QA to developer ratio, needed a threat modeling practice area that focused on making sure that that robust QA practice and robust QA staff that they had could think about security tests. If you work for an organization that doesn't have a mature or a well-staffed QA function, you may not get much benefit out of just using DFDs. If you think about threat modeling in terms of understanding the design at the architecture level and making sure that the right security controls like identity access management, use of encryption and use of encryption for the right purpose, compartmentalization, least privilege. If you want to apply those design principles to your software and you want to make sure that your software and your systems are free of exploit of the absence of those principles, then DFDs aren't going to help you very much at all. And so, when you're considering adding threat modeling to your core capabilities, you have to look at all of the different practice areas within threat modeling. Look at where within the lifecycle of your software development you want to make an upgrade or an impact, and then choose the appropriate tool. If you're thinking about improving the way that your manual testers do exploratory testing, DFDs are a good option. If that seems like minutia to you and you're thinking about designing a new system or changing the way a system works by moving it to the cloud, DFDs aren't going to be very useful for you as compared to secure design. Make sense?
Makes
sense. Sort of a long answer.
No, it makes sense. And I'd like to hear more on how threat modeling has been changed over the past two decades.
So threat modeling has changed over the past few decades a lot. And in fact, I think the last few years have introduced an inflection point in the threat modeling world. I talked about, at Sigital, us taking this sort of research loop and turning unknown to art and art to science and science then to engineering and tools. Threat modeling has persisted in the art phase for the better part of the last decade. But as we've gone through security aware changes to the way we develop and deliver software, mobile, IoT, cloud, we've sort of seen the loop happen enough times that tool vendors have been able to systematize some of that art and begin to facilitate, if not automate, elements of the threat modeling process. That's a really big change because it means now that with tool-assisted threat modeling, you can begin to have mere mortals conduct the threat modeling process as opposed to experts or masters of the art, which is where we were confined to a decade ago. When I talked about sort of the steps or the practice areas, this notion that you have to describe the system and model it, you have to understand who's using it and how. When you think about Cori and cloud APIs and cloud service provider configuration files, some of the tools like Threat Modeler will help you, consume that information and incorporate it into the model without you having to, trundle down to a developer's, or developers' workstations and extract that through interviewing. Once you have those things in a model, having a catalog of common attacks, both at the conceptual level that have happened on the web and happened in mobile and happened in the IoT and are happening in the cloud, and their technology specific shadows. You know, the cross-site scripting, the RMI attacks, the overly broad permissions on mobile, the open S3 buckets in cloud. Being able to catalog those and see the pattern as we move from tech stack to tech stack allows the threat modeling tools to not only help you build the model more quickly, but then, counterfactualize or hypothesize what attacks may work the way you've modeled your software and on the technology stacks you've used, which leaves you, a richly populated workbench with which to make decisions about how to do a secure design against those probable attacks and exposures, or how to test the system, in an exploratory manner to confirm that it doesn't have those weaknesses. So the fact that the tool and our experience doing this across multiple software archetypes has allowed us to encode some of that understanding in the tool has really simplified the art down to a bit of a science. And that's no less than a sea change in what threat modeling will be able to do. More people will be able to do threat modeling inside an organization, and the threat models they create will be of higher quality.
And you've historically shied away from TM tools. Has that changed?
Yes, I plenty of video of me without gray hair is on the internet, sort of bad mouthing a tool-based approach to this. I mentioned that I didn't have gray hair because those videos are rather old. Some of them are 12, 15 years old. And at the time we hadn't gone through the mobile revolution, the IoT revolution, and the cloud revolution. We hadn't seen these iterations of tech stack change, and we hadn't done threat models of them over and over again. Some of the threat modeling tools on the market, Microsoft's freely available tool, the threat model tool, have been on the market for, the better part of a decade, sometimes more, in various forms. And so the maturation of those tools and the encoding of this sort of IP catalog that I'm talking about, in our general industry knowledge and in the tools as IP makes a fundamentally different proposition, than we were cranking about a decade or a decade and a half ago. And beyond that, our ability to connect to a cloud and interrogate it and pull out information about roles, network, host, and now layer 7 and service structure and connections just by querying the cloud really fundamentally changes the physics of how we can author a model and how automatically we can author a model. There was no analog for that in the previous tech stacks. So I would really encourage people, particularly people who listened to me, crank about the fact that this has to remain sort of a human-driven artistic process, reconsider tooling, especially as it pertains to threat modeling in the cloud.
You've also, more history for you, you've also historically cranked about MS's approach, and why was that?
So the Microsoft has undergone a few transformations. Microsoft has played an interesting role in the threat modeling evolution. Windows Schneider and Frank Swiderski's book, which I can't remember when that was actually published, but it was over a decade and a half ago, I believe, was the first effort to characterize what Microsoft was doing on threat modeling. Adam Shostak created a second book on the topic, which really, really formalized in an elegant way what Microsoft has been able to do to postulate, threat actors, to counterfactualize attack vectors, to model threats, to improve security testing, and to score and do risk management on the output of it. In particular, Shostak's book is good at taking those different steps, enumerating them out as different steps instead of a monolithic process. So it's good that Microsoft has spent time evangelizing the practice, but many people don't realize that Microsoft has those really robust QA and testing practices. They're able to devote through their security memo a ton of time and attention to security. Very rarely does a firm that someone listening to a podcast works for look like Microsoft. And so what a lot of people will find is it's really good information they're giving you. It's really hard to apply to your organization. And so that's been my historical challenge. You know, it's kind of like when you look at an elite athlete and you try to use that as the basis for your couch potato to 5K program. Doesn't work that way.
So, John, the space appears to be heating up. What do you think is next for threat modeling?
This intersection of the sort of tool maturation, what we can learn from the cloud automatically by interrogating it through discovery and software introspection. We're going to see, you know, what has become systematized become automated. And what that's going to allow us to do is scale this beyond not just mortals, but to every CI/CD pipeline. And so for listeners who have thought about the evolution of things like static analysis or dynamic testing or cloud configuration scanning, container scanning, open source scanning, I think we're at the cusp of an era where threat modeling will begin to participate in the same sort of continuous delivery cadence. And with a higher level of automation than we've historically seen. And so what that means is not only should we be considering tools when we think about building out a threat modeling practice, but it means that we should think about our threat modeling practices in terms of how we can pick a tool and encode our security blueprints, our reference architecture, and our policy into it so that we can gain automated adherence to those strategy elements, our blueprints, our reference architecture, as part of CI/CD automatically. And that's going to be really neat and interesting.
And final question for you, John, are there any best practices that listeners should know? I'm sure that could be a whole separate episode, but I'd love to hear your answer.
Yeah, let me just try to summarize the things I think I've just said. threat model the things that change when what's valuable to your business or what your business is offering customers changes, or when you have a major pivot in the arch type in the tech stack you're using. Focus your threat modeling efforts there. Make sure to focus on understanding the way your system works, how its components interact, and how its design behaves. Don't just focus on QA and testing. That's sort of a diminutive, perverse version of threat modeling. You pick a tool, and I wouldn't begin a threat modeling practice and then try to convert it into your tool. I would pick a tool and begin to build your threat modeling practice by encoding your standards and your reference architecture into it, and really focus on the cloud, because that tech stack is going to work to accelerate your threat modeling.
Awesome. Well, John, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I hope it was a useful conversation. It was fun to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Hillary McClure, Multimedia Director at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining us today was John Steven, industry expert and Chief Technology Officer at Concourse Labs. Today's episode was brought to you by Threat Modeler, an automated threat modeling solution that secures and scales the enterprise software development lifecycle and empowers organizations to enable non-security professionals to prioritize and address threats strategically. To learn more, visit threatmodeler.com, and you can listen to all of our podcast episodes at cybercrime.radio.